with our allies in the fight for affordable health care.
I'm Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Ahmed Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo Delanderos Thierry has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News.
I'm Michael Jones, KBOO News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a defendant in Portland's civil disobedience trial is found guilty. A New York Democrat introduces legislation to reintroduce the military draft. And protesters hold a day of solidarity in protest of Oaxaca City's federalized police force.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, as of today, there have been 2,867 officially acknowledged deaths of American soldiers. Iraqbodycount.org reports 52,543 civilians have been reported killed by military intervention in Iraq. A new report by The Lancet places the civilian death count at more than 650,000 dead. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, November 20th, 2006. I'm Mike Monkbold.
And I'm Lisa Lewis. Andrew Shipley, who grew up in Lake Oswego, is the first Rhodes Scholar from the University of Oregon in at least a dozen years. Shipley is one of the 32 Americans who will get to study at Oxford University in England, thanks to the prestigious prize the Scholarship Trust announced Sunday. At the University of Oregon, Shipley created his own academic path that was part political science, part psychology, and part evolutionary theory. He published multiple papers in academic journals, went on to research trips to Ecuador, Ghana, and the West Indies, and had a GPA of 4.04. Shipley's goal is to study the causes and perhaps to lessen conflict in a war-torn world.
Officials are looking to make Beaverton the first Oregon city to ban replica guns in public areas. Beaverton Police Chief David Bishop asked the city attorney's office to draft an ordinance that would ban airsoft guns, which resemble firearms but generally shoot plastic pellets. Most have a brightly colored plastic barrel tip to distinguish them from real weapons. Some users, however, paint the tip to make it more closely resemble a real gun. If Beaverton passes its ordinance, anyone caught in a public place with a replica could be cited with a violation. City officials have not yet determined a potential fine.
Deschutes County commissioners today denied a Measure 37 claim to open a mine and build homes within the Newberry National Volcanic Monument in Central Oregon. But now, the 3-0 decision could be reversed. In June, James Miller asked that the county land use laws be waived so he could develop a geothermal power plant and build homes on property within the monument, a protected natural area. Now that the court has refused to grant the waiver, he requested about $203 million in compensation. The county found that Miller's interest in the property wasn't sufficient under Measure 37 and didn't date back to 1969 as claimed. This is from the Oregonian.
At the Microproducts Breakthrough Institute on the Oregon State University campus, the focus is on all things tiny. Researchers at the institute are working on projects from a microreactor that can manufacture biodiesel anywhere, to a handheld personal air conditioner that could cool U.S. soldiers in Iraq. The institute is a collaboration between Oregon State and the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory. Although the MBI has collaborated on more than $10 million worth of projects since its inception in 2002, Director Landis Canberg says he wants at least $15 million annually. The Microproducts Institute works with materials as small as one atom, Canberg said. Primary research materials are metals, plastics, and ceramics. Current research includes products like a portable kidney dialysis device that treats patients in their homes and while traveling.
The newly tapped Republican National Committee General Chairman said Saturday that the GOP must return to core beliefs to regain national leadership. The address, Senator Mel Martinez's first since his new post was announced, came as Republicans are reeling nationally from the loss of both houses of Congress. Martinez said continued Republican success in Florida was a sign that state Republicans needed to lead a return to, quote, the party of ideas, including smaller government and fewer taxes. Florida Republicans held on to the governor's office and 2 out of 3 cabinet seats. Martinez attributed GOP losses to the party's failure to speak, quote, in a unified voice. Martinez takes control of the party in January as President Bush enters the latter half of his second term with deep divisions in the party on issues such as immigration and the war in Iraq.
North Korea ended up at the top of the agenda on the APEC summit that wrapped up this weekend in Vietnam. Free Speech Radio News' Jason Strother has more from Seoul, South Korea.
North Korea's nuclear program dominated much of the APEC summit. As the conference in Hanoi came to an end, a joint statement expressing strong concern over Pyongyang's atomic test was read behind closed doors. Over the weekend, President Bush met with heads of state from nations involved in multilateral talks with the reclusive regime, which may get back underway this December. While solidifying cooperation with Japan, the president was unable to convince South Korea to participate in cargo inspections of suspect North Korean vessels, and both Russia and China urged patience and voiced concern about pushing Kim Jong-il too far into a corner. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jason Strother in Seoul, South Korea.
10 days after Election Day, the outcome is still in dispute in a handful of close contests for the House as election officials count and recount challenged and absentee ballots. Elections officials in New Mexico hope to have certified results today, while a North Carolina recount was expected to wrap up Wednesday. Meanwhile, a dispute in Ohio over a new voter identification law will delay results in one race until past Thanksgiving weekend. Elections in Louisiana and Texas will go to runoffs in December. And in Florida, a judge is holding hearings over ballots used by electronic voting machines that recorded a much higher number of undervotes in the contest to replace Representative Catherine Harris. The outcome of these races won't give Republicans a new chance to take back the majority in Congress that Democrats won Election Day, since Democrats have too big of a margin of control.
Oregon could be poised to set aside significant state money for schools for school construction and allow districts to levy developer fees for schools. Under the state's current system, school operating costs are paid for out of a common pot of money. But the costs of building or renovating schools are left entirely to local property taxpayers. That makes it tough for fast-growing districts and those with many school buildings. A legislative work group headed by State Representative Dave Hunt of Clackamas County has been trying to hammer out a solution. The group may recommend asking voters to amend the Constitution to authorize general obligation bonds for K-12 school construction, as is already allowed for college construction.
A Montana state senator has officially changed his party affiliation from Republican to Democrat, breaking a tie to give his new party a 26-24 advantage. State Senator Sam Kitzenberg filed the paperwork at the Secretary of State's office on Friday. He said he had been thinking about switching parties for about 12 years and made the decision at the suggestion of Democratic State Senator Mike Cooney. Democrats have a 50-49 edge in the Montana House. One Democrat, Sheila Hogan, lost by just 24 votes, and party officials said this past week that she will ask for a recount. If she were to win, the Democrats' lead would change 51-48.
Anti-war activist Michelle Dar was on trial today for her part in a protest at Senator Gordon Smith's office. KBOO reporter Martha Odom was at the courthouse, and we're joined in the studio right now by Ms. Odom. Hello, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Michelle was found guilty today of criminal trespass. She was fined $500. The state had asked for a maximum fine of $750, but the judge declined to go the maximum. Michelle was arrested in late September at the World Trade Center in downtown Portland when Civil Resist Portland, an anti-war activist group, attempted to meet with Senator Smith. His office is in the building. They wanted to demand the senator act to end the Iraq war. The senator shut the office down for the day. And after about 3 hours of occupation, the group was arrested and hauled off to jail.
Did the court allow any testimony about the legality of the war?
Presiding Judge Greg Lowe conceded that the war was problematic, and he complimented Ms. Starr on her heartfelt commitment, but he refused to allow photographs of victims of the Iraq War to be entered in as evidence. He did, however, quote, cut some slack while Ms. Starr was testifying. Defendants from the October 5th World Can't Wait protest were scheduled to be on the docket. The state was not prepared to proceed, so they have been set aside until December.
All right. Thank you very much. That's KBOO's own Martha Odom. Thanks again for joining us. Oregon could be poised. Oh, I'm sorry. More than 70 House lawmakers are urging Amnesty International to reject a proposal that would end its neutral position on abortion. The group, winner of the 1977 Nobel Peace Prize, is reassessing its position on access to abortion in cases such as rape, sexual assault, incest, or risk to a woman's life. It said in a statement released at the news conference that the reappraisal follows its global Stop Violence Against Women campaign. The group is not debating whether women have the right to have an abortion under any circumstances, it said. A decision could come at Amnesty's next international gathering in Mexico in August 2007.
In the U.S., a powerful New York Democrat plans to introduce a bill to reinstate the military draft when Democrats take control of Congress in January. Mitch Jezerich reports.
Democratic Representative Charles Rangel of New York said on Sunday that he'll introduce legislation to reinstate the military draft. He spoke on CBS's Face the Nation.
If we're going to challenge Iran and challenge North Korea, and then, as some people have asked, to send more troops to Iraq, we can't do that without a draft.
Rangel has been unsuccessful in previous years under a GOP-controlled House to move his bill. Last year, he offered a similar measure to reinstate the draft for men and women between the ages of 18 and 42. When the new Congress convenes in January, Rangel will be the chair of the Tax Writing House Ways and Means Committee. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mitch Jezerich in New York.
Florida Democrat Christine Jennings is contesting her loss of a congressional seat to Republican Vern Buchanan after state officials certified that Buchanan won the vote by 369 ballots. Jennings is disputing the number of votes cast in Florida's Sarasota County, and her lawyer says that there were reports of voting problems. The state is conducting an audit of Sarasota ballot machines, but that review is separate from Jennings' challenge. Buchanan says Jennings should stop taking advantage of what he calls, quote, high-priced lawyers and out-of-town special interest groups, end quote, and concede. The two were competing for the congressional seat being vacated by Republican Catherine Harris.
A Pakistani detainee at Guantanamo Bay doesn't want to undergo a heart procedure there. But a federal judge has ruled the U.S. military doesn't have to send him elsewhere for the treatment. The prisoner says the procedure is too risky to do outside a cardiac unit. And his lawyer says if something goes wrong, doctors could have to perform emergency heart surgery. But the Justice Department says the procedure was successfully done at Guantanamo in 2003. It says the needed equipment and personnel are there, and transferring the prisoner would be an unnecessary security risk. Now, the prisoner, who has a history of heart problems, has only two options: have the surgery at Guantanamo or opt out of it altogether.
Democratic Chairman Howard Dean on Friday took a swipe at Washington critics who questioned his strategy on spending money in all 50 states, dismissing them as, quote, the old Democratic Party, end quote. Dean told the state party chairman, who were among the biggest beneficiaries of his strategy, that it was an approach marked by Democratic wins in all levels of government. In recent days, political strategist James Carville has assailed Dean, saying he left too much money unused that could have been used to seize a larger Democratic majority in Congress. Regardless of such criticism, the Association of State Democratic Chairs gathering at a ski resort getaway adopted a resolution voicing strong support for Dean. The state chairman and vice chairman were key to Dean's successful campaigns to become national chairman in 2005, giving him the votes he needed to trump critics from inside the Beltway.
In Texas, a white supremacist who brutally attacked a Latino teenager has been sentenced to life in prison. Renee Feltz reports from Houston.
Sri Lankan government said it will temporarily reopen the key A9 highway to the country's north for transportation of essential commodities.
And we'll get back to that story in a minute.
Between the government forces and the country.
Germany's culture minister and top museums called today for more transparency in the return of paintings stolen by the Nazis. The government insists it stands by a 1998 agreement signed in Washington to identify and return to the rightful owners of works illegally taken under the Nazis. However, museum directors have expressed concern over losing paintings acquired in good faith with the intention of showing them in public. Culture Minister Bernd Neumann and museum directors agreed today to form a working group that would consider how to better handle restitution cases.
An Islamic charity accused of being part of an international terrorist organization tried to distance itself in federal court today from a suspected Al-Qaeda financier. The Treasury Department considers the Islamic American Relief Agency an arm of the Islamic African Relief Agency, a Sudanese group accused of giving money to terrorists. The FBI raided the charity's office in Missouri and the homes of people affiliated with the group nationwide. Since then, the 20-year-old charity has been unable to raise money. Attorney Sharif Hadi Akil told the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit that this charity was not part of the Sudanese group. The organizations have independent leaders and separate bank accounts, he said. A federal judge rejected the group's lawsuit in 2005, finding enough evidence to support the Treasury Department's decision.
And now we're going to go ahead and try that story again about a white supremacist who attacked a Latino teenager in Texas.
Jurors convicted 18-year-old David Henry Tuck for beating a Latino high school student during a party in Houston suburbs. During the attack, witnesses say he yelled white power and racial slurs while he sodomized the victim with a plastic patio umbrella pole, kicking it and causing massive internal injuries, as well as cutting, burning, and pouring bleach on his face and body. On Friday, jurors heard more about Tuck's violent history against minorities. After deliberating for less than an hour, they sentenced him to the maximum punishment allowed by law, life in prison and a $10,000 fine. In Houston, I'm Renee Feltz for Free Speech Radio News.
A former GOP fundraiser convicted of embezzling from the investment went before a judge today to find out how much it will cost him. Tom Noe, a prominent coin dealer accused of taking at least $2 million, was convicted last week of theft, corrupt activity, money laundering, forgery, and tampering with records. The combined charges carry a possible sentence of nearly 70 years in prison, although Noe is expected to receive much less time. Separately, Noe already has been sentenced to 2 years and 3 months in federal prison after pleading guilty earlier this year to funneling $45,000 to President Bush's re-election campaign. Investigations into the coin investment led to ethics charges against Republican Governor Bob Taft, who pleaded no contest to failing to report golf outings and other gifts.
The Associated Press reports today at least 700 Iraqis have died in violence over the last 7 days. In Baghdad, a deputy health minister was kidnapped from his home by unknown gunmen. Salam Tlaib and David Enders report.
Qasim Yahya is a spokesman for the Ministry of Health. He said that yesterday had been a normal day for Amar al-Safar, the deputy health minister in charge of reconstruction. Safar, who is a member of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's Dawa Party, lives in mostly Sunna Adamiya, a neighborhood that is chafed under U.S. occupation and fought battles with the Iraqi police and army.
Yesterday, he stayed at work until 3 p.m., and then he returned home to his house with his guards. The attackers came with cars. There were 5 cars. They were wearing uniforms to disguise themselves as police. One of the security people entered the house and they took him, and that was 5 p.m. Now everything is very messed up. We don't know the reasons people are being kidnapped and who is doing it.
Such kidnappings, in which the intentions and perpetrators are often simply a matter of speculation, occur daily in Iraq. Some are for money, some are to punish supporters of the occupation and the government it supports, some are tribal feuds, and some are carried out by the government and its affiliated militias. It is already extremely tough for the government to operate, but Yahya fears the paralysis could become total.
We have about 1,500 important people in the ministry, and we're just one ministry in 37 ministries in Iraq. Should we give each person a military escort when they go home? Right now, we have all the guards we can at the ministry, but we can't protect every single person.
A doctor from the rest of northern city of Kirkuk, which yesterday saw a bomb attack against a funeral for a Kurdish police officer that killed at least three, described a run-in he had with anonymous abductors after a suspected gorilla was brought to the hospital a few months ago.
The police brought this man who was called Abu Yaqub. He was shot running away from a car bomb he was leaving. He came to the hospital bleeding from his leg. The next day, at 5 a.m., about a dozen people wearing police uniforms show up. They killed the policeman guarding the hospital. They killed him very professionally, with shots to the head, and then they took Abu Yaqub.
After that, the doctor moved from Kirkuk to the southern city of Amara, which has seen fighting between rival Shiite militias and bomb attacks against occupying British troops.
The situation is much better than Kirkuk. There was a car bomb and 20 people killed every day randomly. I don't want to be a doctor anymore.
Syrian Foreign Minister Walid al-Malam is in Iraq today in one of the first official visits by a Syrian official since 1983, when Saddam Hussein broke ties with the government of Hafez al-Assad, the father of the country's current president, Bashir. As U.S. policymakers increasingly encourage involvement of Syria and Iran in negotiating a peace in Iraq, al-Malam staked out the position of calling for a timetable for U.S. withdrawal, a demand of Iraqis that has thus far been rejected by the Bush administration. I'm David Enders with Salam Talib. David Enders with Salam Talib for FSRN.
A Bosnian immigrant was sentenced to more than 5 years in prison today for concealing his role in the 1995 Srebrenica massacre so that he could get into the country. Marko Baskic was convicted over the summer of hiding his military service on his immigration application. Boskic's attorney complained that the government was trying to punish Boskic with a crime he was not charged with and that he claims he committed only after he was threatened with death himself. Prosecutors say Boskic acknowledged that he was a soldier in a Bosnian Serb militia unit and helped execute 1,200 Muslim men and boys at Srebrenica, where some 8,000 Bosnian Muslims were killed. Boskic was living in Peabody and working construction jobs when he was arrested in 2004. Officials at the UN War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague have said that they do not plan to prosecute him.
The Italian government today replaced the head of Italy's military intelligence agency, who is under investigation in the alleged CIA abduction of an Egyptian cleric in Milan in 2003. Niccolò Pallari was replaced after a special cabinet meeting, along with the heads of the civilian intelligence agency and the agency that coordinates the country's intelligence services. Pallari had long resisted widespread calls for his resignation, which intensified after he became the highest-ranking Italian official named in the investigation. He faced questioning in July by prosecutors in Milan, who asked Washington to extradite 26 Americans, all but one believed to be CIA agents, in the case.
A former high-ranking aide to Chicago Mayor Richard M. Daley was sentenced today to nearly 4 years in prison for covering up illegal patronage hiring at City Hall. Robert Sorich and two other men were convicted July 6th in a scheme to make sure political campaign workers got city jobs and other applicants were frozen out. A fourth defendant was convicted of making false statements when asked about the scheme. All were former city officials. The mayor has not been accused of wrongdoing in the case. Sorich, who worked in the mayor's office of intergovernmental affairs, was also fined $10,000. Prosecutors said the defendants rigged interviews and falsified documents to hide the city that the city officials were violating a court order against considering applicants' political affiliations.
The current time is 5:25, and now, time for another highfalutin daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
At last, the national government is responding to the widening gap and the severe economic side effects of greed-fueled globalization by extending real power to labor unions and cracking down on sweatshop goods. Unfortunately, this national government is not our own. It's China's. Yes, the Chinese rulers, who have a brutal record of repressing labor, have suddenly embraced a new doctrine of protecting worker rights. This is not altruism at work, but self-preservation. The ruling elites are in a sweat over massive social unrest there. So they've proposed a new law to empower formerly toothless labor unions to negotiate on wages, safety protections, and workplace rules. Now, guess who is howling in protest? Dell, Ford, GE, Microsoft, Nike, and other brand-name corporate giants that have been abandoning U.S. workers and communities for Chinese sweatshops. They have profited for years on the backs of China's impoverished workers, hiding behind the doctrinaire hokum that globalized sweatshops will somehow, sometime, raise the living standards of those workers. As the surge of Chinese social unrest indicates, however, workers are no longer swallowing the hokum, and the time for pushback is now. Expatriate U.S. corporations are lobbying ferociously to get China's government to drop its labor reforms, wailing that the new laws amount to socialism. Socialism in a communist country? Imagine! Well, say the Dells and Nikes, these rules would make it more difficult for them to fire workers. Well, duh, yes. The corporations might ask their former American workers, and that seems unfair. This is Jim Hightower saying, what must the Chinese people think? Just as they might get a small break, here comes the U.S. of A., represented by these greed-headed corporations, stomping on their dreams. Who elected Dell, Nike, and the rest to do this in our names?
This Jim Hightower commentary has been brought to you by the United Steelworkers, the union committed to winning every employee's right to choose representation free from fear of being intimidated or fired. Visit us on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Yahoo Incorporated announced a deal with seven newspaper companies that will allow more than 150 papers to sell ads on the search engine's online classified service. Monday's announcement comes just 2 weeks after Google said it had brokered a similar deal with 50 top newspapers to sell ads through its website. The move could help the struggling newspaper industry increase lagging ad revenue. The companies that have signed on with Yahoo publish newspapers in 38 states. They include the San Francisco Chronicle, the Denver Post, the Houston Chronicle, and the Dallas Morning News. The partnership will start in December with Yahoo's Hot Jobs service. The Yahoo program will enable advertisers who list jobs in any of the consortium's newspapers to post their jobs on Yahoo Hot Jobs and throughout the Yahoo network.
A top Russian immigration official today defended a new government decree that puts strict new limits on foreign laborers and vowed to tougher reinforcement of immigration laws.